here we are on another Code Pen Radio, everybody. I'm with Rachel Smith. Hi, Rachel.
Hi. Hey, everyone.
Yeah, this is for something. I don't know. You don't know. I'm sure nobody cares what episode number it is. Just look at your podcatcher. You know. It's in the 14s somewhere. And I'm forcing Rachel to talk about Apollo. Just the most enthralling technology subject that's ever lived, which is how do you get some data into your front end of your application, you know? Just amazing stuff. And at one point, you know, actually before this call, I hate that when podcasts do this, but I'm just going to subject you to it anyway. Before this call, we talked about all the interesting stuff.
We were doing some jokes. You guys had to be there.
Yeah, you missed it. But it was a little bit about technology choices. Like, are a lot of code pens just React? Or are you shocked? No, nobody's shocked. Nobody's ever fired for using React, as they say. And it's like, is there probably better stuff or whatever? Sure, you know, and I think you probably just assume there is, right, Rach? Like, what is it? I don't know, but
yeah. I mean, if I was going to start from scratch, I wouldn't choose React these days, but that's, you know, that's here nor there. So when you're working on a product.
Well, it's here nor there because I'm sure that you would also say that you don't recommend that we switch at this moment.
No. But if I was starting like a brand new thing right now, I wouldn't choose React. But no, after years and years of investment in it from CodePen, no, I would not want us to switch.
No, it doesn't even bother me. But I get it. Like, but that's true of some other technologies we use too. We've also chosen GraphQL API that's powered by Argo servers. And that's also a technology choice. And part of, we're going to end up talking about Apollo, and I had written down Apollo Cache to talk about, but this is foreshadowing. Rach is like, that's just how it works. Like, it's not, you can't really separate the cache from other technologies. But my point at this moment is that we're just living with our technology choices, but like, they're good enough that there's no big desire to change them. GraphQL being one of them, Apollo being one of them, React being one of them, Next.js being one of them. We are just what we are, and nothing is like so big of a problem that anybody is considering changing stuff. In fact, we just shipped the new like React compiler or whatever, and we just got some speed benefits just for nothing. Like, we're still getting some benefit from this ecosystem, certainly. So I'm okay with that. All right. So GraphQL, you've lived it deeply. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so we have this thing called Apollo, which I guess there's a server, which I almost know nothing about because I'm more front-endy, I guess. Do we use that? I guess we must, right?
No. So we don't use the Apollo server product at all. We've always used Apollo client. We, for our server side, we use, we have two different GraphQL APIs, one on the Ruby server, one on the Go server. So I can't remember the name of the Ruby gem. We use like a particular Ruby gem for the Rails implementation. And then on the Go side, we use something called Go GQL Gen, which what that does is basically it's like a schema first generation tool. So you write a GraphQL schema and then the GQL Gen tool generates a bunch of code to make GraphQL server work like it should based on your schema. And then you sort of modify it from there. So it will like generate a bunch of boilerplate, but if you want to change something about the way your implementation works, you can just modify the code it generated. We only use Apollo client. That's the only Apollo
client
product we use. Okay. Yeah.
I guess that makes sense. I mean, I guess I knew that. I didn't know if there's just like a secret Apollo server gen like Go thing that just is secretly in there, and just works magically.
Server
no, products. And I know what GQL gen is, obviously, because that's a lot of what we do at the API level. It's like, oh, we need to work on the API. You always start at the schema, always,
yes,
and you like adjust it, and then you run this tool, this GQL gen tool, and then we get what are called resolvers out of it, right? And it probably makes some types somewhere. It does a bunch of magical stuff. That's kind of nice. At some point, we even get TypeScript types out of it. I don't know how that works, but that's pretty nice.
We use another GQL GraphQL generation tool, which sort of looks at the schema and then generates TypeScript types on the for the client, which is nice. Yeah.
Yeah. I kind of like it, you know, make sure they're in sync and all that stuff. So the way that Apollo client works, this is my, like, explain it like I'm five, because I might as well be five sometimes with this stuff, is that that Apollo gives you this, you know, this and thing that you grab off NPM or whatever called Apollo client. So in your actual components, like literal React components at the top, just like you import React from React, if this particular component needs to ask for some data to render itself, like say the title of a pen or something, you import like query or something. It's just called query, right? From it's Apollo client.
Use query.
Yeah, like, they're hooks.
There are hooks. Yeah. So you've got use query, use mutation. There's also just, you can also just get access to the cache itself or the client if you want to just like make a request with the client, you can do that, like a fetch request to the GraphQL API.
That isn't, because otherwise, because hooks have a bunch of rules and stuff, like they have to be called at a certain time and all this.
Yeah, hooks sort of like have to live in hook land. So they're very, I mean, the use query hook is basically the essential part of ensuring that your UI updates when something changes. Because the use query hook makes that possible. But you can use it without hooks as well.
We probably use query like hundreds and hundreds of times in our components.
Yeah,
right?
To just render basically anything, any information from our server, we'll use a use query. Yeah.
Yeah. And so you know, we have this API that's just full of every piece of data that you could possibly ever want on CodePen. And so we don't have to get into all that, but you kind of design that API to like be useful to you, because that thing can return whatever you want it to return. It's not necessarily like one-to-one with a database table or something. It can just be whatever.
No, that's one of the selling points of GraphQL. It's like the idea of having this API layer in between your, you know, your data model, your database data models, that is more thinking about in like, what does the client need? What are your customers trying to do? Like, what are those stories? And you can sort of design an API that fits all those use cases rather than like, what does our database look like? You know, it's sort of.
And we do that. And you encourage us to do that. Like, what is the graph? It's like being smart about stuff like that and how it like nests within each other. It can be interesting too. And anyway, so that's the API. Great. Now we pull in this use query hook, and the thing that you have to give the use query hook is a query. And so you you literally write a file that's called like, you know, you maybe you have like pen header.tsx, and then you have pen header.graphql and pen header.module.scss or whatever. You have all these individual files that are in charge of, you know, rendering the component, styling the component, the data for the component, all this, and they're all co-located, and I just like it. It's just a nice way to build a little component system, I guess. And okay, so then what was so interesting to me is that, like, you don't, with this approach is almost like a mindset with these GraphQL query files. Like, there could be 30 components on the page that all care about the pen title for some reason. And you don't have to give two craps about being efficient with asking for that title. If you need the title, just ask for it in the GraphQL file for the thing. Like, it doesn't matter. You don't have to worry about 30 network requests for title happening, because we just submit ourselves to Apollo. Apollo will just make that efficient somehow, right? Is that fair to say?
Yeah. It will, in any particular moment, it will be handed a bunch of queries to do, and it will sort of like go through those and like combine them. So, and that's because you have the graph, it's able to do that. Like, it can look at the graph, look at your queries and go, oh, yeah, we just can, we'll just get everything, like we'll smush all these queries together and we'll make one query that gets all of this information, and then we'll hand back all of those bits and pieces back to the components that asked for them.
Yeah, that to me is already like very cool and useful and
yeah,
amazing to me. And also like maybe makes me feel a little stupid because I'm like, this seems like very great for what we're doing. So like, why is it not cool anymore? Like GraphQL seems to like be going out of favor. And you're like, well, what do you do then? Because this rules, I think.
Yeah, I think it's like probably overkill for a lot of people, to be honest. Like, I feel like a lot of products probably don't need,
like, I suppose, like if it's a blog or whatever, you're like, what are you doing?
There are a lot of layers of technology required to achieve this system, which is pretty cool. But then I think that, you know, along with those layers of technology, there's, you know, maintenance, there's many places where things can go wrong. Like the more layers you add in, the more locations you have to look at when you're trying to debug an issue. You need more people to like be aware of how it works. I feel like if I were to like get hit by a bus tomorrow, like you guys would survive, but you'd be like, damn, like really could use Rachel around to like just explain this API stuff to me again, you know? Like it's just like a level of expertise is needed for certain things. So I think when you weigh up all those, like when we weigh that up, we're like, oh, absolutely, this is worth it for us and what we're trying to do. But then I think probably other teams would be like, there's a lot and like I don't really see that much benefit to it, you know? So yeah.
Well, that may be combined with the idea that it's non-trivial client side. Like React is already, people point to as being like a little bit heavy, although, you know, perhaps the extent of that is exaggerated, I think, but it's more like what you're doing with it. I don't think it's React itself, but Apollo adds a non-trivial amount of weight to the front end too, but it does all this efficient network stuff, right? And then this is the part that like I find extra interesting. It all comes back and it hands it out to the components that need it, which is amazing to me. And then the React model kicks in and like re-renders if it needs to, or renders for the first time, because a lot of our components just like bail out on rendering if the data's not ready, right? And so it might be rendering for the first time. And then it's like ready to change if the data in the use query needs to change in some way. It gets some, that's cool. But it puts it in this cache. Like the data all comes back and it hands it out or whatever, but it holds on to it too in this interesting way that you explained to me. That's like you can control how it's indexed and stuff. But if you have an ID attribute, which we do on like tons of stuff, right? It just is kind of like auto ready to be asked for again. So it's like if a component re-renders, which React is like, that's why you use React a lot. Like components re-render all the time. If a component re-renders that has a data request in it, I think if it didn't have the, like, I think it's kind of required to ask for the data again, however it's set up to do that. And if it didn't have the cache, it would have to go to the network again to get it, which would suck, right? So like this model like works pretty nicely with the cache.
Yeah, you need a cache. You need the cache layout to prevent, you know, request, like excessive requests, but you also kind of need it to keep this like observable situation where like, so if component A requests the title of a pen and then component B updates that title and then it like gets the new version of that title, the value of that title changes in the cache. And that is the mechanism that tells component A something's changed. So you need a client-side copy of the data so you can monitor. So Apollo client, this is what Apollo client does as a tool. It monitors changes to that data and then it publishes that change back to the components that are listening for it via like a use query.
So when I said it goes and gets this data and then it hands it out and then it puts it in the cache, that's actually a little wrong. It goes and gets the data, puts it in the cache, and then the cache informs everybody who needs it.
The technology of the cache is the mechanism that keeps track of all these things and like updates them where they should be updated.
Yeah, it is, because it had me fooled for a minute, because it feels like it's just this perhaps optional-ish thing that you could do because cache equals speed. Like, that's where all caches exist, because it just makes something faster to do. And that's true here too. But it's like, It almost has a more important job, which is to just like be the canonical place where this data is. And if it changes, to let everybody know. That's like vitally important too.
Yeah, it is the thing that enables the functionality that like most people would reach Apollo client for. They would go, oh, I want a Apollo client because I want my stuff to just auto update when I like change it somewhere else. Right. Like, you need the cache to be able to do that functionality.
Yeah, very interesting. So it's just they can't be separated, which makes sense. So I was talking to Steven about our embeds the other week on this podcast, and that we didn't want to put Apollo onto the embeds because, like I said, it has kind of some non-trivial size costs in the JavaScript bundle, and we aren't doing a ton of interactive stuff. The embeds don't care if you're logged in. They don't save anything. There's no mutations from a, well, there might be, but maybe one from an embed that has the prefill, you know, maybe that causes one. But for the most part, it's a pretty non-interactive, at least with the data layer. So like, why do
they're
we need
static.
It? We
don't. Yeah.
Pretty static. And we even have these, like, it gives you these things called reactive variables. That's just kind of like a little weird little bonus feature of Apollo client, but we actually make use of it. So like, why not? We're loading it anyway. Might as well use it. That I think we mostly like. Anyway, we didn't need any of that embeds, so we're like, let's not use it. Let's use a really lightweight one. And we found this really, for a minute, we were considering just like sending over a string of the HTML or of the GraphQL query that we needed, because like that the server doesn't care. It just gets a query and it fulfills
it. Just send a request.
You don't need a library. But I don't know, that comes with its own pain in the ass things. And Urkel was so small. URQL, lowercase, Urkel is just a very small library.
It's just a query builder thing, is it?
It is.
It just builds a query for you.
It has a use query thing. But guess what else it has? A cache. And the way you've explained it, it's like, it has a cache because it has to, because that's like how these things work. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Which that was elusive to me. So thanks for that understanding. Pretty cool. Because at first I was like, okay, so we have this cache everywhere. And you're like, because that's just how it is. But I was like, so you're on the homepage of CodePen and you query for 6 pens. So there's, because you know, you're seeing them in the grid. So now we have 6 pens in cache, which is kind of a lot of data, but you know, whatever. And then you click forward and you get 6 more and those go into cache as well. And then I was like, well, what? And then I was like, oh, I get it. So then if you click the back button, they're in the cache. So it'll just load really fast. And you're like, well, because actually pagination is a whole different thing.
Yeah. The way the Apollo client cache works is it's kind of, you could think of it like a very simple sort of database. But everything is just indexed based on their identifier. It doesn't have to be an ID. It can be an ID or it could be a combination of field values. But basically, it's just a string. What they do is they just like either use a single string value or they like combine strings together with some like colons, and they give it like an ID in the cache. So the way you look items up is via their ID. It's a very sort of very simple database. So you cache individual objects, you cache each pen on their ID. Then they also cache queries based on their inputs. So if you're querying for a page of pens, the way we do that is with cursor-based pagination. So we will put in a cursor value, and then that query will live in the cache with whatever cursor value you've used and the pens.
Cursors, by the way, this is weird to me, but a lot of pagination you'd think would work with like you know, P equals two in the URL, like page two and P3, mm-hmm. P4. But for whatever reason, that's another podcast for sure. that's not, we don't do P2, P3 through. We have a cursor value instead, and the cursor points to like a position in the pagination. I don't remember why, but that's the deal.
Yeah, so cursor-based pagination is just basically you are using an item, like an ID in the database, that mm-hmm. as the starter point for a page or the ending point for a page, depending on which direction you're going in. And mm-hmm. so that's how you query the pens out of the database. It's just kind of like start with this value and get the next 10 pens or whatever the page size is. So we pass in a cursor. And what a Apollo client does is then, so it'll say, I've got this pens query and with the cursor value of null, for example, and it hands back these six pen IDs. And what it does is, so it takes those IDs, and those IDs point to the pen values that are also stored in the cache. So it, like, the whole cache works on like every piece of information getting stored with like an identifier, which is a string, and then they're all pointing to each other. So like the pen object is cached once, and then any query that refers to that pen object is just pointing to that pen with the identifier. Yeah. So it will hand back six pens and it'll say, this is the query with the cursor of null. Then you hand in another cursor value and it's like, okay, I haven't queried for this page yet, so I'll go and get it. And now I'll store that. For this cursor value, we've got these six pens. And so it won't need to go and request those pens the next time you give it a query with the exact same cursor value input. So, for example, if you land on the homepage, cursor of null, we page one page forward, that's a cursor value. It has to go get those six pens. You go back a page, and the way cursor pagination works is like when you go back a page, you're actually handing it the cursor for that first page, not a value of null. So it will go, oh, okay, another cursor value, I'll get those pens. So it actually will request those six pens again, because
it is
cached the value of null. If you had hand it null, it would be like, I've got these. But because it's been given a cursor value again, it will say, oh, I need to get those. And then you page forward again and it's like, oh, I've seen this cursor value before. I know what comes back from this. So it will hand you back those pens from the cache.
That finally is really quickly. So if you want to experience the glory of cache, go to the CodePetto page, paginate forward, then paginate backwards, then paginate forward again, and you shall receive the glory. And I was like, really? We do all this caching work just for that? And so I'm glad we did this. So to clarify my understanding here, because it's not just for that. Because I was like, that's a little too...
Yeah, this is the way that Apollo... that's how the Apollo client works by default. So in terms of work on our end, it's not really. We didn't have to do much work. We just asked for the pens and then it's storing them. Where most of the work goes into is thinking about organizing your data in such a way and indexing it in the cache in a way that's going to be the most useful for you, because at least with our stuff. Yeah, well, at least with our stuff, like just indexing everything on its ID is not going to be enough to do what we need to do, especially in the new editor. There's lots of different, especially with pen versions and the versions of each of those pen files. There was a lot of thought went into like what is the identifier on each of these pieces of information that will identify it in the cache. You want to, one, be as efficient as possible, but also you need things to like refresh when they're supposed to, like invalidate in the cache when they're supposed to. You don't want things to get stuck in the cache where like the client's like, oh, I've already got this file. It hasn't changed, you know? And it's like, yeah, no, it definitely
I noticed we do have to, we have to sprinkle that stuff in. Like, there's, isn't there some kind of directive in the use query where you can force it to not use the cache if you're like really sure that you want it?
You can do, you can, yeah, you can tell it not to behave that way, but it's, it, the more complex part of it is thinking about how each piece of information is stored in the cache and how you will like point to that piece of information from other objects that require it. So
that sounds complicated.
It's almost like trying to design out a database on the client. Like,
and so is that a schema too? Is that, do we have some file in there that I've never seen that's like the design of the cache?
Yeah, it's, so we have like client side only schema that like tells the cache how to behave and what, like how things should be structured, what should point to each other, and yeah, that sort of thing. So there's a whole, there's a whole client only GraphQL schema that's involved in that.
Yeah, right. And we have tests and stuff. That's always a classic where we're working on something and then the tests break and it's because these like cache snapshots no longer reflect like
the data's changed. Yeah.
Yeah. That seems a little like, that's almost like a thank God for AI, because it usually has a pretty good suggestion on how to fix it.
Yeah. It's a bit like how you, when you add a column on your server side table, you have to migrate the database, but also a bunch of other things that, you know, like we're using that table or testing that table. And so it's the same thing on the client. If you change the structure of a table, on the client, it's not a real table, but it's just like the shape of an object, then yeah, you have to go and change all the tests that were, you know, set up for that and any code that's referencing that. So it's non-trivial when you move something.
It's really this
something.
Combination of technologies, as I'm thinking of wrapping this up here, that like, if we didn't use React, this would be less useful. If we didn't use, you know, like there's all this stuff that combines together to be pretty useful. Like Next.js.
I feel like you would only reach for GraphQL if you were using React. I don't know. I just feel like they just kind of go hand in hand.
Right.
As technologies.
Perhaps they do.
Yeah.
So we have that going on, and that's fine because we'll benefit from some technology synergy or whatever. But do you think one missing piece for us is that we like, we only use like a little bit of SPA like technology? Like, there's a lot, plenty of just page refreshing going on, and we lose the cache every single time a page is refreshed, right? That is like a very temporary concept in it. And if we were just all single page app all the time, we'd have this cache that would just be blowing up as you're navigating around the site. Like, maybe that's bad for memory reasons, but you'd think it would be pretty efficient. Like, if you're looking at a pen on the home page and you click over to the editor and we didn't refresh the page, I know that you think that you have correctly identified that there's lots of issues with this, but still theoretically it wouldn't have to ask for a bunch of stuff. It doesn't need the title. It already has the title.
We'd have certain things preloaded. Yeah.
So maybe that would be nice. Do you think like a full-on SPA site like benefits the most from a cache?
I think, I mean, the editor itself, like that is a massive SPA on its own. Like, forgetting like the rest of like CodePen, the site, and the browsing aspects.
It already is. I like thinking of the new editor.
The editor is like a big hulking SPA. Like, it's so like, I don't know if there would be like a huge benefit to like combining that app with the rest of the site. There'd potentially be some benefits to, you know, like on our, and we probably will in the future, like when you arrive on the home discover page, you know, you have the home page, you can have like trending or your work, like there's these different options of like what you want to see on your home page. We could probably benefit from like combining that sort of experience into, you know, single page app. There'd probably be some performance boost from that. But as from like going from the the homepage or your work straight to the editor and having those two be the same app, I feel like it would be a bit of a headache and like probably not the biggest, you know, performance boost. Because
that's the one that I'm like really interesting, because it seems like it would be so cool if that loaded.
Yeah,
so
the editor itself needs so much more information about a pen than just what we render in like a preview, that it would kind of be like, yeah, okay, maybe it would render the title straight away, but like load all the in all the code and like just all the permissions and all the pen settings and just like all this stuff, like just it's not that's won't be in the cache before you actually fire up the editor. So
yeah, that's true. That's true. But maybe some like, you know, maybe there's more a general different way to think about it, where like the chances of any session on CodePen hitting the editor at some point is really high. So like, what could we do if you're the first page you did on CodePen was the homepage or whatever? Could we be like preloading stuff that's related to the editor so that when you hit the editor, it feels a little more instant? I'm just imagining a world where you click from the homepage to the editor and it feels like really, really fast. It's not that it's slow now, like we're shipping the way it is. It's like not bad. It's fine. In fact, in my opinion, it's quite a bit faster than some of our apps in the similar space that we're in. But what if it was like really, really fast? You know, of course, that's just, you know, I don't know. Preloading might be the answer. We'll see. Well, thanks, Rach. That was really cool. I understand things a little bit better.
No worries.
Yeah. Sometimes it's a little embarrassing. Like, shouldn't you know that? You're like, no, I'm busy. I have a podcast.
There's too much to keep track of. Honestly, we have so much going on at CodePen. There's too much. Yeah,
a little bit going on. Pretty good. All right. We'll talk again soon. Thanks. See you later, everybody. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Chris. Bye.